me. I wish I knew. I wish I knew you wanted me. I wish I knew.
Kicking off here in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios, Sam, catch us up on what we missed yesterday. Tell us about last night.
Thank you. Some news in the NBA, something we all knew was coming. But Victor Wembanyama, he unanimously wins Rookie of the Year, receiving all 99 first-place votes. First unanimous NBA Rookie of the Year since Karl Anthony Towns back in 2015. Obviously well-deserved. 21 points, 10.5 rebounds, about 4 assists, and 3.5 blocks in his just shy under 30 minutes a game. So unbelievable numbers for Wemby in his rookie year. Already has got a ton of respect from guys around the league, obviously, but he will continue that dominance.
I'm all in on Nike's ad campaign for him. Did you see the alien commercial?
I did not.
Pretty sick.
It was just a big cutout of basically a crop circle. I mean, they've cut an alien into, or at least digitally imposed an alien into this big cornfield, and it zooms in, and then you see the guy. I'm like, who the hell is that guy? And it's like a fan that went viral at a Spurs game in a Wembanyama moment where he like went behind the back and dunked, and like the fan like it zooms in courtside, and he's just like got this look on his face like, what the hell did I just see? So like it comes down from the sky and it just zooms in, and this guy just like kind of has that same look on his face as like the voiceover is like, do you believe in aliens? Essentially, like it runs down his track record, like only player in NBA history to have like it's like 22 points, 9 rebounds, X amount of assists, X amount of blocks, X amount of threes. It's like aliens are among us. Do you believe? And it's pretty cool. I think Nike and the alien stuff will be good with him.
He, I saw some of his interview last night on Inside the NBA. I don't know if you saw that because they get the chance to announce the winner. And again, no surprise there that it was him. I'm struck by, you know, he talked about how it's such a privilege to be playing in the league. And I mean, just said all the right things. And for his age, he just seems mature beyond his years already. So the NBA's got to be feeling really, really good about their future with players like him. Obviously super talented, freakishly talented, but also can already carry himself and do media really well, and just seems like a classy kid.
Yeah, he's going to be a problem next year.
Yeah. Some coaching news. Jason Kidd, he has signed a multi-year extension with the Mavs. Obviously, that one's a little bit significant because his name was getting floated out there as a potential candidate to replace Darvin Ham over there in L.A. That will not be coming to fruition. He stays in Dallas, doing well. 50-plus win seasons in 2 of his 3 years. Obviously, Southwest Division title this year. I think that's an interesting one that is off the board for the Lakers now. I think that one is kind of high on the list of people in the NBA who are kind of waiting to see what the Lakers do with that job and kind of how that whole thing plays out this offseason and how LeBron stacks up with everything in there, how much control he's got with that new coaching hire and everything like that. It'll be interesting. But Jason Kidd staying in Dallas.
Yeah, I never really bought him as an option there. He's got a pretty good thing going in Dallas right now. The problem with Kidd is always what happens in like year 4 or so. Like, how many years has he been in Dallas at this point? Do we know? Does it say how many years he's been there?
I was going to say it seemed like maybe about 3.
Okay. Which maybe that's usually whenever it falls apart for him. I feel like it's always good at the start, and then the star on the team ends up hating him, or he tries to get too much power in the organization, which maybe his relationship with Mark Cuban and the Mavericks has kept him under his under good control, I guess. But yeah, it was year 4. Milwaukee got fired. Is that the only other head coaching job he's gotten fired from, I guess? Because he left Brooklyn. Okay, maybe. Anyways, Kidd, good for him. Seems like he's finally kind of figured it out, going from star player to really good role player, coach on the court, to getting a head coaching job really quickly after his playing career. He's kind of figured it out now, I think, in year – it's already kind of, guess what, year 10 for him? As a coach,
wow,
between head coach and assistant coach.
Yeah.
He was pretty good this year for them. Mm-hmm. What else?
In college basketball, Pat Knight, son of former Indiana coach Bob Knight, he is getting hired as the next men's basketball coach at Marion University in Indianapolis. Pat Knight, he's been a scout for the Pacers for the past 10 years now, so he's getting out of that, going into the head coaching game. You've got a former Hoosier in Steve Downing, who is the AD at Marion, and they play an exhibition game every year, them in Indiana. So you'll see Pat Knight back at Assembly Hall.
Yeah, he can't coach.
Yeah.
I'm serious. I mean, he got his dad laid out a job for him at Texas Tech when he retired. He failed there, went to, I think, Lamar University, didn't succeed there. He's been spending time, I think, with the Pacers recently mm-hmm. as a scout.
Yeah.
Marion University is like NAIA. I mean, it's I've had a couple buddies actually play there after high school. It's a good school, but if he can't succeed there, then I'd say coaching's not his thing. Yeah, that's all I got to say about Pat Knight. Not a big fan.
Nepotism.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wins again. It's undefeated.
Yep.
Yeah, and the Steve Downing tie is what leads me to believe he gets the Marion job, too, like you just said, Sam. Yeah, it's crazy. They take care of their own.
Snoop Dogg, he's getting into college football, baby. Snoop Dogg, he is sponsoring the Arizona Bowl, presented by Gin and Juice, by Dre and Snoop. This one is interesting. They have taken over the Arizona Bowl that was previously held by Barstool, and they're out of the game now. Just said that they couldn't really make enough money doing, you know, putting on the production and everything for a bowl game. Snoop Dogg's going to try it out. I think this one will be interesting.
Well, Barstool sure as hell didn't spend enough money on the production.
Yeah, they chose to make it their own production.
It was horrible. It was horrible. It was like a student run deal. That's a joke. I love the name of this, though, the Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl, presented by Gin and Juice by Dre and Snoop. I mean, that's going to be a hell of a logo.
Yeah.
Snoop Dogg was once on trial for murder in the mid-90s.
That's all your thoughts on this?
Every time Snoop Dogg does something like this, I'm just like thinking about just the shift of his reputation, just the glow up of his career. To just be on trial for murder.
Yeah, listen to this quote by him and think about that, what you just said. College football fans are exhausted by the constant talk around NIL, conference realignment, coach movement, transfer portal, and super conferences.
I'm going to go ahead and say this is not Snoop Dogg's quote.
So it's time that we get back to the roots of college football, when it was focused on the colleges, the players, and the competition, the community, the fan experience, and the pageantry. I'm ready to bring the juice back to college football.
Bring the juice, the gin and juice. Yeah. Oh, okay, I see.
ChatGPT did a good job on that one.
Yeah, I'm going to say that's not Snoop Dogg's words. I feel pretty good about that.
Said he said it in a video, posted that. I'm sure, I agree, he didn't write it. But
we're going to bring the juice back.
Yeah.
R.I.P. OJ.
Yeah, he's quite an evolution over time for that dude.
We got too many bowl games.
Got to meet Snoop. By the way,
you got to meet Snoop.
Oh yeah, man! We did back when I was running DIY Network. We were doing a episode of Man Caves. Tony Siragusa, do you remember him?
Oh yeah,
he was one of the hosts.
The Goose,
rest in peace. And we did a episode with Snoop, and that was my joke when I went out and to the upfronts and presented to advertisers. I said, yeah, we're really excited. I was able to watch this show firsthand. I was at the shoot and didn't catch too much secondhand smoke in the, you know, there's a few people that chuckled, not many, but
get a little of this guy, comedian.
Yeah. You gotta make him feel loose, but he was nice enough, man. But it's like, what a, only in America, man. Like you said, was on trial for murder. He makes money hand over fist at this point.
And yeah, NBC had him on the Olympic coverage, you know, with him and Kevin Hart a couple years ago.
God. How was Tony Siragusa?
I'm sorry?
How was Siragusa?
Goose was he was a good dude. He was kind of high maintenance, but he was a good guy, man. Yeah, he really was.
You sound like you're glowing thinking about Tony Siragusa,
yeah,
Sam.
Good,
what
I mean,
do you
always hear good stories
What
about
do you know
him?
About the Goose?
You always hear good stories about the guy. I just want to know Bob's perspective on him.
We don't like Tony Siragusa in this room, okay?
Oh, because of the...
Because the Titans-Ravens rivalry, okay? Like yeah. That's when it ran deep, okay? I know maybe it doesn't feel the same for you and your generation, all right? But for me, we hated that Ravens team. We don't like Tony Siragusa. And every time we see Ray Lewis do his stupid dance, we get mad about that too.
He's like the only nice guy on that team.
In this
full of criminals and murderers.
In this room, we don't like Tony Siragusa. Now, if you want to tell me you like Ed Reed, I'll maybe allow that because I like Ed Reed just because we got the same last name, Uncle Ed. But you and Tony Siragusa, I don't know because he was just a big nasty on the defensive line.
Yeah.
Falling on my boy McNair.
I liked him too because he was a Colt before he was a Raven.
He looked so cool on the sidelines whenever they – yeah, I guess he transitioned after, you know, and was just doing the sideline reporting. He always looked nice and cool in his big leather jacket.
Yeah.
His big fat boy out there. He did seem like a cool dude. But in this room, we hate Tony Siragusa.
Like.
We sports hate him.
Yeah, that's fine. You can sports hate him. Lastly here, some news that is kind of telling to Tennessee here. Chaz Lanier, he got invited to the G League Elite Camp. They invite standout college players basically to potentially earn an invite to the NBA Combine. I guess this is kind of like a little stepping stone to try and get an invite to the NBA Combine. But Chaz Lanier, he is one of the invites. Florida's Zion Pullen gets one. Jalen House from New Mexico. Aaron Estrada from Bama, some other recipients of this. Obviously, you're still kind of expecting Lanier to just test these waters of the NBA, come back, hopefully is a Vol. Not exactly sure of that one, but you do see Lanier continuing to push some of the NBA stuff. So that is, you know, just something to kind of keep an eye on, I guess.
Yeah, it prolongs the timeline to maybe get a commitment, which starts to feel a little uncomfortable because I know he has the do not contact tag on him, but that does not prevent his camp from reaching out to other schools and seeing what's out there, and you know, we know there's some schools that are still active, so I'd just like to lock him up, but we probably won't until he gets feedback on this G League camp.
What percentage are you at, Bob, that Chaz Lanier ends up at Tennessee next year?
Oh, I still think strong, maybe 85%.
Oh, okay, that's really strong.
Yeah, I still think so, but I mean, there is that slight chance that it doesn't happen. I mean, by all accounts, it sounded like you know, he's been in contact with the university. They've been supportive of his process, all of that stuff. So it's, again, just the longer we wait, excuse me, the longer we wait, the longer, the greater the chances are, I feel, of other schools trying to pop in there because he's getting great reviews. That's
Kentucky seems like they have him locked down based on
Twitter.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah, their fans.
It's pretty funny.
Their fans think it's done.
But if it were Kentucky, I would feel more, like, less confident in them getting him if it were Calipari that were at Kentucky, because then he could use those NBA guys and they could talk to Lanier and do all that. But now that it's a new coaching staff that hasn't won a game in the NCAA tournament, I feel more confident that Barnes and them can lock him down since, like, they've been on a higher trajectory than Kentucky over the past couple of years.
No, I think that's a good point. Yeah, I would definitely be in a little more fear if Cal was in the mix. And he still may be, but I think Kentucky's the one that seems to be the most active right now.
I almost go the opposite there, just in the sense of, like, I feel like Pope and Kentucky's going to be more desperate to really try to, like, sell this guy on being the focal point of the offense and throwing, you know, the most NIL money possible at him, just because they've put together a roster that, you know, is taken – pieces from all around the country and taking some Big 12 players and bringing in some Mormons that have been on, you know, their mission and everything. But, like, they haven't landed, like, a guy that makes you go, oh, okay, this is the leading scorer of this team. At least it hasn't felt like. Like, Kirk Creasa, not going to be that guy. Some of the other guys are just kind of your average starters. They haven't had a go-to person kind of emerge. So it almost feels like they're going to be more desperate because they don't have a Calipari, which means they don't have the five-star All-Americans coming in that they can give the ball to. And I don't know, that's kind of the way I've looked at the way Mark Pope's trying to put this roster together.
I think he's just, I think Pope's just trying to get talent, period. I mean, Kobe Brea, you could argue, is a similar player, but he doesn't seem to be as prolific so far as Lanier has been. So, again, if Lanier is as good as advertised, and we've seen some video on him, I mean, he's going to fit wherever he goes. So I'm not surprised that in this day and age, there's schools that are, you know, that do not contact tag. It's not like a rule that you can't contact them, yeah. You know. So I'm certain that there's people out there fishing a little bit. So let's just hope he sounds horrible. Let's just hope he gets his feedback with the G League. Nobody loves him, and he gets to Knoxville. We need him.
Do you think we need him?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do.
I know we want him, but, like, need. So, like, you think this team will be deficient without him?
We just have so many unknowns with, in my opinion, with D-Stone, with Milicic. I'm thinking offensively. If you look and you look back with Zakai and Meshack as your primary returning guys, that's about 16 points a game combined. They need scores, in my opinion. So, yeah, I think we need him.
Sam, you agree with that?
Yeah, I think he's, like, priority. I think he's – you absolutely need a guy like him.
I really want him. But, like, if he doesn't end up here, I think Tennessee still has a top 10 roster. Just, like, metrically, like, when you look at the way Bart Torvik, you know, puts the rankings together in terms of what's left on a roster. Like, I think I'd still think Tennessee was a top 10 roster, so let's just call it a top 15 team coming in the preseason.
I would agree with that. I just think if we want to get to that next level, we need more bucket getters.
I feel like he takes you from like a top 15 team to a top 5 team.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say he takes you from right now without him, you're a Sweet 16 to cap Elite 8 team. I think with him, you get to definitely into that Final Four contention that you were at this past season.
All right. I want him, and like I think I agree with what you guys are saying in terms of him making you better. Like I get that. I think with or without him, Tennessee is going to be in that same fringe of like programs that have a chance to get to the Final Four that looks more like an Elite Eight team. Like I feel like even with him, like it's kind of where we'll be, like Elite Eight, hoping to get hot and break through or win a game. Like you know, it's, I don't know how much he changes that for me.
I just feel like you go back a little bit more to the older Barnes teams, kind of, if you don't have him. A little bit more of a, you know, communal scoring type deal, and you don't really have that number one guy that's the guy to, you know, that reliable guy that you had in Connect, kind of.
Let's talk some Tennessee baseball with someone you can rely on, Kirby Connell, the best, most reliable arm out of the bullpen so far this year. Stick with us. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio. Back on the morning show. Let's bring on friend of the program and a mainstay in the Vol bullpen, the number one team in the country, Kirby Connell. Kirby, top of the morning to you.
Good morning to y'all.
Let's do a little vibe check. How did it feel yesterday when the news came down that Tennessee was now number one in the polls?
Yeah, you know, we don't really look at that much. You know, it's cool for a little bit. But for us, honestly, it doesn't matter what number we have beside us. You know, we're just going to go out there and play our brand of baseball.
So let's rewind a little bit, Kirby. Good morning, by the way. Thank you for joining us. We were all watching that doubleheader on Friday against Florida. It was a long day. And probably a long day for you, too. You appeared in both games. I was just curious – in a situation like that where you came in, you locked down the save in the first game and then you come in the second game, you got a little bit of a gap in between. How do you stay ready in that type of scenario? It's one thing that you're pitching, you know, one day and then you might come in the following day, but to do it within two games in the same day, walk us through that. Just that has to be a little bit different from a prep standpoint, wouldn't it?
Yeah, so, you know, we prepared to play Thursday night, got all the way up to, you know, the coaches meeting, and then we get canceled. So we all knew we were going to play a doubleheader. It was just a matter if we played 18 innings or 2 7-inning games. But for us, you know, for me, it was, you know, trying to stay ready for both games. Luckily, I only threw like 5-6 pitches the first game. So V came up to me and was like, hey, like, can you throw the next game if we needed? And I was like, yes, sir. So, you know, we get a break. We get like a 45-minute break. And then knowing that I'm not going to throw in the first, you know, four or five innings, you know, I was able to have that break, you know, get out there, get out in the bullpen. He gave me enough time to warm up. And then I was ready to go in.
Have you ever said no when he's asked you if you're ready to go, if you could, if you can give him some pitches? Have you ever said no?
No.
I didn't think so. It seemed like I had some friends down at the game on Saturday as well, and they said that you went out to the bullpen for a little bit on Saturday too. Were you thinking about pitching three straight games, or were you just doing something else in the bullpen?
No, I was ready to throw for the game three if needed. You know, maybe in a jam situation or a save opportunity.
Talk about on game three, the very first at bat, Christian Moore gets called out for runner interference. I think that's the most angry I've seen Tony so far this year. What was it like being in the dugout for that?
Yeah, it kind of caught us off guard because, you know, that rule, you know, some people like it, some people don't like it. But in that scenario, it was not the right call. And that's just my honest opinion. But, you know, V was just trying to back up. You know, he's trying to have Simo's back because, you know, Simo found a way to get on against, you know, Jack, and, you know, started us off with a great at bat. And so, you know, Coach V was trying to have his back, trying to have our back as a team. And, you know, I don't know, it was a weird scenario. It kind of got us all fired up. You know, the dugout was going crazy because, you know, we started the game off with a hit, and then all of a sudden, you know, that they want to take it away from us. So, and then the next at bat, Bert gets hit. So it definitely just fired up the dugout a little bit more. It gave us a little bit of intensity, and, you know, we were ready. I think we came ready to play that day. It's just, you know, it took us a little bit longer to get it going.
Kirby, what's kind of the mindset of that, you know, in those doubleheaders as a pitching staff? Is it kind of all hands on deck, and, you know, when arms are kind of getting tired, is it anyone go in, or is that pitching staff with Anderson and Coach Vitello, are they really just trying to stick to a schedule and keep kind of guys on that, you know, regiment that they want them to keep them on?
Yeah, I think for us it was all hands on deck. It was, you know, we had a lot of guys that, you know, that could throw. We had a lot of guys that in the bullpen that were like, you know, I think it was more for the second game. I think we had a total of six guys in the bullpen at one point. So it was, you know, who can throw at this point, who can throw in this situation, who's going to be the best arm in this situation against this guy. I think it was, you know, everybody needed to be ready, and I think they all were.
Kirby, this is your third time on the program, so I do consider you a friend of the show now. So as a friend, I think we can be honest with each other, and I got to say, after the Alabama series, I was a little worried about the pitching staff. I was a little worried about the bullpen. But as we sit here on May 7th, I think all those worries for me have gone away. From your perspective, do you see the growth? Do you see guys improving? Or was it just kind of like, hey, this is kind of always who we thought we would be? And, you know, it was just a, you know, one series sample size to start the SEC, you know, against Alabama.
Yeah, I think for us it was, you know, we're still going up, we're still improving every single day, but I think it was kind of a, you know, eye opener for some of the guys that, you know, haven't played in the SEC, you know, getting their first experience of the SEC and how it works, you know, that you're not gonna fool anybody, you know, these hitters are pretty good, and they're in the SEC for a reason, so for us it was, you know, I think it was we got a little shell shocked. You know, to start the season off in the SEC play. But no, as you can tell, it turned around, and, you know, we're getting going right now.
So looking ahead, obviously we don't want to look past, tonight's game. You got Queens College tonight, but then big series against Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt's fallen on some hard times, but they're still Vandy and still a big rival and still very capable. If you're, again, one game at a time, I know you guys are focused on tonight, but then if you look ahead a little bit, Any thoughts on what Vanderbilt brings to the table in terms of stuff that you guys have to focus on as a team to keep the train rolling here?
No, honestly, I haven't even looked at anything on Vanderbilt. But, you know, once we get past this game, then I'll, you know, my focus will turn towards them. But, you know, it's playing them for 4 years. You know, it's going to be a grind. It's going to be a three-round fight for us. We just need to go out there and do our thing and, you know, see what we're made of. But I think it's going to be a good series. You know, Vanderbilt's had two tough series back to back. But I think it's going to be hard. It's hard to play in Nashville. But you know, I think it's going to be a fun one.
What do you think happened last week against Lipscomb?
I don't really know. You know, I don't think we showed up to the field, you know, ready to play. I don't think that was just our thing was, you know, we thought we could get by with what we have, but, you know, we kind of underestimated.
How hard is it on these midweek games to come out laser focused? Because, like, an SEC play, you know, seven straight series wins, you guys have been nails, you know, you're one game back of first place, and, you know, you guys have been really, really good, number one team in the country, obviously, but... Yeah, how hard is it to get up for these midweek games? Tonight, I would imagine, is a little bit easier after losing to Lipscomb last week, but it seems like that would be a real challenge.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of a struggle, but, you know, we always know we're going to play. You know, we have a four game week, you know, so we look at it as, you know, your first game is going to be on Tuesday, then you worry about the next three after that. But I think, you know, we just show up to the field ready to play, get our minds right, you know, do what we have to do to, you know, get better this week. And I think our coaching staff does a great job preparing us throughout the whole week.
Can you talk about that message from that coaching staff, in particular with these openers that we've been rolling out? Obviously, Stamos there at the start and rolling into Causey, and then you had Seacrest rolling into Nate Snead, and that really seems to be working well for y'all. Can y'all talk about that? You know, just kind of the overall message, I guess, from that coaching staff in particular about those openers and kind of what that strategy is at the start of those games.
Yeah, I think it just gives us an opportunity, you know, for these guys, you know, that, you know, you see it as, you know, Xander and Stamos are starting, you know, they could go two innings, they could go five innings if needed. I think it just helps us in the future when it comes to, you know, if we have to play multiple games in a regional or SEC tournament or super regional, it just helps us knowing that, okay, like if Xander and Stamos are, you know, rolling and we're up pretty big or up by a good amount of runs, then, you know, we can keep them out there, you know, because they've got it to experience, you know, the starting role, you know, in the SEC.
Have the coaches or team leaders taking any precautions with stickers on bats heading into Vanderbilt? Because last time the boys went to Nashville, there was a big controversy, Kirby.
Yeah, no, I don't even think, you know, that what's crazy is we traveled to, when we went to Florida, I was thinking about this. The pitching staff, there was only three of us that were there. So this, I don't even think half the team knows anything that went on in Nashville 2 years ago. So I don't think that's in our mind right now.
Seven in a row against Vandy. That's on our minds, at least. You guys one game at a time, I get that, but seven in a row is what we're thinking here.
All right. I like the sound of that.
So again, in the spirit of looking at what's right in front of us, what can you tell us about we're still trying to learn about Queens College tonight. You know, do they? What do you know about them from your scout? I mean, are they stronger pitching wise? Are they stronger offensively? What's the approach for that game tonight?
You know, I'm not real sure. I haven't looked at the scouting report yet. When I get to the field this afternoon, I will look at it. But I'll get a card about their hitters, and I'll go through, and it's usually me and Xander. Me and Xander will go through and look at it, you know, the scouting report on that, and talk about, you know, what we both see, how we can approach them, But no, I honestly I couldn't tell you anything right now.
Gotcha.
Last one on the way out. Was Tony annoyed that you guys are now ranked number one? Because I feel like as a coach, you want to keep the boys humble, you want to keep them hungry. Was he a little annoyed that you guys actually got the number one ranking?
Yeah, you know, I would say so. I'm not real sure. But no, like I said, you know, it doesn't matter the number beside our name. It's not going to define us. We're still going to go out there and play our brand of baseball, whether we're number one or, you know, 250th. We're still going to go out there and compete with any team.
Kirby Connell, a workhorse out of the Tennessee bullpen. Anything you want to plug on the way out?
I think I'm good.
Appreciate you as always. Keep it running. Keep it rolling. We're all rooting for you. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Kirby.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me on here.
Talk to you soon, I'm sure. Hopefully right before, or, you know, regional, super regional, Bob. Maybe lock that in. Good scheduling-wise. Knoxville's going to be buzzing.
Oh, yeah.
Postseason baseball back in Knoxville. Maybe, you know, Friday morning. Maybe. I imagine on Friday morning of the regional, I imagine he'll have the scouting report a couple days before and actually have gone through that one. It was a little jarring. I guess it kind of makes sense, but, like, I imagine for the regional, they'll have that out a couple days before
they
really study.
I would think so. And, I mean, again, no disrespect to Queens College, but I think that's part of it, too. It's the opponent. You know, they gotta be focused tonight. But there's – I don't know about their progressions, how they're – there's probably a lot of prep going on for Vandy, too. So
I also think Kirby's probably hoping he's not pitching tonight. I think he's hoping to get a lot of those young guys out there and give them some experience and not have to burn some of your – normal arms in the bullpen, I guess.
I disagree. I think he wants to pitch every game. Like I told you, like he pitched a doubleheader. That's crazy in itself. Like I can't imagine that's happened too many times in other series where a guy pitches twice in one day. And then again was out there ready to go for game three too. Like went out to the bullpen for a little bit just in case. I know what you're saying in terms of getting like guys' experience and everything. I understand what you mean, but like I think he actually wants to pitch every game.
He probably wants to pitch. I think our coaching staff is saying our last worst case scenario, we're putting Kirby out there.
I wonder, you know, for someone who seems to be so aligned with that program too, you know, he's part of it. Yeah, I mean, he's kind of synonymous with it, right? I mean, hell, I named my fantasy baseball team after him a couple years ago, you know, Volley Fingers. This is the last run for him, right, as a player, and so I'm just wondering. I didn't get to ask that question, but we'll get him on again. And it's like, you know, everything could be his last as a player, his last trip to Vandy, which may not be a bad thing, but you know, could be his last regional. All those things. It's I wonder how that sets. You know, we talked about that in basketball season too with Triple J and Santee and Dalton, and he's another one that's like that.
No, when you first booked him for the first time, you know, we kind of thought that was going to be kind of an assistant coach type of role for him this year. And he had talked about, you know, maybe hanging around. And Vitello had talked about, yeah, you know, if he doesn't pursue anything professionally, we're going to keep him around and have him on staff and have him helping the team. And I didn't imagine he was going to be a workhorse, you know, especially an SEC play. I didn't see that coming. And he has been this year.
Yeah, so I think to your point, I think he wants that ball every time he can get it. But, yeah, I agree. I mean, ideally, I'm thinking if I'm Tony and Frank, they probably would prefer not to be using him tonight. We'll see, though.
Yeah, you want all your good arms to be ready to go this weekend. But at the same time, I do think you'll see a little bit of a different approach from Vitello tonight just because of the way they did kind of sleepwalk last week. Not saying you won't get the youth, but I imagine he'll manage a little bit more like a real important game.
Yeah. Choke him out early. And
I imagine the boys will be focused tonight. Like, hopefully you don't have to actually get to your leverage arms in the pen. Like, hopefully your offense, you know, keeps you a big lead. But, like, that's the thing about these midweek games is, like, it's hard to be laser focused when you know, like, new guys are playing. And, like, it feels like an exhibition game. It feels like a game where you're not sending out your best team and you're throwing your best arms. I just imagine Tennessee will have that focus tonight after getting embarrassed last week by Lipscomb, especially with the number one ranking, especially with the RPI and what's at stake now down this stretch run. I bet you'll get a different sense of urgency. Any other thoughts on Tennessee baseball versus Queens tonight?
What's the weather like this evening, by the way? I mean, I think there's more rain.
Fine.
Is there?
Seems like there's just rain every day this week, though.
I know.
According to the old app, the rain comes in at 1 a.m. tonight.
Okay.
So nothing to really worry about before then, I don't believe. That segment is brought to you by Logo Solutions, powered by SM Athletics. If you are a business owner, club director, member of a social or religious organization, listen up. You have a logo. We have a solution. Check out Logo Solutions, powered by SM Athletics. They can help represent your brand, get your merch to represent your brand, your mission, your club. From custom apparel to headwear and promotional items, Logo Solutions is your one-stop shop for all of your branded merchandise needs, made right here in East Tennessee. Be sure to give them a call for all of your logo needs. 865-966-3434. That's 865-966-3434. We'll open the phone lines up here this segment. If anybody wants to weigh in on Tennessee baseball, NBA playoffs, anything that's happening, you can give us a call. 865-288-3131. 288-3131. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio. Bob, so far, who are you giving the edge to between your boy Kirby and my boy G-Reg as far as recurring guests go?
Ooh, that's a tough one.
Because Barnes has only been on twice, so you got to have him on three times before he's officially recurring, I think.
Right. Maybe G-Reg, only because he's done it a little more than Kirby with us. That's all. Just more frequency. Kirby's starting to settle in. He's able to talk candidly about it, you know, that he hadn't really had a look at Queens. I thought, okay, he's not trying to BS us, you know, shooting straight with us. So
I don't really know, man.
Yeah.
Is that his third time or fourth time on the show?
Third, I think.
Okay. Couldn't remember if I was for some reason I was thinking just fourth just then, but I don't know.
We almost had him last week, but his schedule, because they were traveling, it was a Thursday start, was a little bit variable, and then they lost to Lipscomb, and he kind of went dark, which I understand, you know, that they were probably pretty focused on getting ready for Florida at that point.
What happened against Lipscomb? I don't know, man.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sam, you going with G-Reg or Kirby?
I think I'm going to give it to G-Reg. I do love talking baseball with Kirby, though, because I do feel like it's a little bit something else that we're not, you know, like super tapped into. I feel like we can kind of piece things together with basketball, but baseball is a fun little twist to be able to, you know, to kind of get that inside information from someone on the team. But
they're both very loyal to their capo.
Oh, yeah.
They're both very loyal to Tony and Rick. They don't want to make any headlines for those guys.
Mm-hmm.
I love how he calls him V.
Yeah.
I would like a real update on what V was doing inside of the dugout after the Christian Moore thing, because it was so funny. Like, Tony was unhinged, and then, like, he went down the steps and came back up and was like, all right, clapping, like, seemed calm again. Like, it's like he just had to get out of his system, and it almost felt like he's trying to send a message to the team. Like, hey, we blew that game too. This matters. I'm going to get fired up. I'm going to try to get you guys fired up so that we come out and we play like our heads are on fire. And then Tennessee kind of sucked for three or four innings. Like, it wasn't like you really had the blow-up of emotions, right? Like, because if you saw that at the beginning of the game and you saw the final score, you'd be like, okay, hell yeah, it worked. Good job, Tony. You got the boys fired up. They came out. They started hitting right after that. But instead it was like, hey, you do that, and then Tennessee didn't really score for a couple innings, and you fall behind 3-0. But then, you know, you have the big sixth inning, and the team woke up, and you did what you needed to do, but it wasn't instantaneous. It wasn't like the ploy to get the boys fired up paid dividends immediately.
Yeah. I'm just sitting here thinking, the other thing I love about Kirby and what's evolved there is he's, again, if you think about what's synonymous with this program, we have a lot of great, great players. But I think about, obviously, the first name that comes to mind when you think about our baseball program is Tony Vitello, right? Kirby's not far behind, at least for me, and it's not just because he's been on the show. It's just everything about him. He's been around for a while. He's such a part of that team. The mustache, the whole vibe with him. I mean, he kind of, to me, epitomizes Tennessee baseball, and I'm really thankful that we're able to have him on, and hopefully we'll be able to have him on during the tournament run too.
Yeah, I mean, he's a mainstay.
Yeah.
He talked about how, you know, few pitchers were actually on the team just 2 years ago.
Right.
When Tennessee went to Vanderbilt, which is kind of crazy. Really laying that out there. And then you look at the offense. I mean, the offense is probably a little bit different. At least, you know, like Burke and Moore were out there. But, like, I'd say the offense probably half, if you actually counted it up, too, of how many people were still there. Just even 2 years ago. Some turnover, of course, in college sports. I really want to beat Vandy.
Yeah,
it's so nice having a 7-game streak against them.
That whole Whistler thing, man.
Just keep it running. Keep it going. Let's get to 10. Let's get to double digits.
Dude, Corbin running around with his batting helmet on, and just reminds me of, like, I'm dating myself, so you guys may – there used to be an old Bugs Bunny cartoon where there was
– You're talking about Elmer Fudd?
No, not Elmer.
I know Elmer Fudd.
Milton, I think, was his name, and it was this guy. He was he wore like a Spartan helmet. You could never see his face. He was like an alien, but he was you know, always getting run through the ringer by Bugs, and you know, he would always be like, "You're making me very angry." And
what'd you call him?
I want to say Milton.
Was it not Marvin the Martian?
Marvin, that was it. Marvin.
You acted like I wouldn't know. You acted like
I'm looking at the younger, really.
You acted
younger
like
guys.
I didn't know Marvin the Martian. Get out of here.
I knew you were talking about it. I just didn't know the name.
Milton the Martian doesn't have the same doesn't have the same ring to it, Bob.
No, Marvin. That's it. Marvin. But that's who Corbin kind of reminds me of, you know, a little guy running around with a big helmet on his head. And
you kind of have a chance to put him out of his misery. I know the season ain't over, but like it does feel like they're on their last legs. Kind of like the way you retired Paul Molinari at LSU. You kind of put him out of his misery. It does feel like Corbin on his last legs. There was a Vanderbilt beat writer yesterday just talking about how bad the vibes are and how everyone like is worried that the team's checked out and that Corbin's just got a really weird way he's carrying himself right now, kind of fueling the retirement speculation and just him being defeated with this team. Because, I mean, we thought of Vanderbilt as a top-five team at the beginning of the conference play, right? I mean, going into conference play, they were thought of as like a legitimate championship level team, and you know, the class of the East, and maybe the second best team in the entire conference behind Arkansas. And that's not really played out. They're what, fifth in the East right now, if you look at those standings? Behind Georgia, behind us, Kentucky.
Yeah, they've South Carolina over too, the maybe. I mean, it's a great example. Over the years, they've got such a body of work. The way they're flailing this season, I still think they get a lot more respect than other schools would, just because of, again, their history. But yeah, it'd be nice to put them away, sweep them would be wonderful. But yeah. They're wounded animal, though. You know, they might play a little more desperate. That might be to their benefit.
Well, plus they've also been allegedly cheating at home. There's been those rumors about them too, and. Are you familiar with this, Sam? Have you seen this story coming out of Nashville or the accusations, you know, fueling from, was it the A&M coach a couple of weeks ago talked about teams cheating?
I thought he was talking about Georgia.
I think apparently he came out and said he's not talking about Georgia and just said, look at the difference in home and away splits was like what he said. Because, yeah, the video had came out about Georgia's pitcher like over on the side doing something. But
I thought I saw there was some damning evidence from Georgia's home and away splits too, maybe, but I don't know.
Vandy's ain't great either, okay. And I don't know if he's talking about Vandy or Georgia, but he apparently came out and said he wasn't talking about Georgia because that's who he had just played. So right. He was trying to be like, hey, everyone thinks we're talking about them. I'm not talking about Georgia. But like, yeah, Vandy apparently has some pretty damning home and road splits in terms of just how wide the gap is of how good they are. I don't know if that is them cheating or not. I know at one point they were good and now they're not good. Maybe they got caught cheating and said, hey, it's time to quit cheating, and now they're not good. I don't know. But, yeah, it seems like you can put them out to pasture. You got an update, Bob. You said you wanted to talk some Vols across the majors. kind of wrap this up?
Yeah, just to keep it on the baseball note, we got a few guys out there playing. We've talked a little bit about it, but guys that started the season on the big league team, Garrett Crochet with the White Sox, pretty bad team, but he's had some decent starts. He's had 8 starts this season, 2 wins, 4 losses, ERA over 5. Again, they're one of the weaker teams in the whole league, but he's had some good performances. He just had a win on Sunday, I think, and a lot of strikeouts per innings pitched, so he's doing well. Nick Senzel finally has gotten hot again. 5 home runs, 11 RBIs for the Nationals, batting .242. Trey Lipscomb's been up and down. I think he got called up at the beginning of the season, then went back down, and then I think once Lane Thomas got hurt, he came back up.
Yeah.
It's so funny, and like it's just the way the majors are now, but like you saying Nick Senzel's gotten kind of hot, and then at the end it's like .242 batting average, which I know batting average isn't the end-all be-all anymore. It's a lost art in terms of just getting hits, but like I just thought that was kind of funny.
No,
gotten hot, .242.
Yeah, he was hovering around .200 a couple weeks ago. So he's gotten to kind of a mediocre batting average, if you will. But Lipscomb's got a home run, 4 RBIs, .241 batting average.
I mean, that's around league average right now, though, right?
And
the majors, like I was listening to a broadcast, it's kind of like the average batting average has gone down, and it's like the .240s.
Yeah,
it was like the high .240s, but still, like that's crazy.
Yeah, I agree. It's
that's what I've appreciated so far about this Tennessee baseball team, and especially like Christian Moore at the top of the lineup. But
right.
Against Florida, was just peppering single after single after single. Like it's a lost start, but also like it's still kind of fun to watch teams just get hits.
Yeah,
I know we like home runs. I understand that. I understand the value of swinging for the fences, because if you make contact and you hit a home run, obviously that eliminates having to string together a couple of hits and steal and do those things. But like, I still like that part about baseball.
Yeah,
it's kind of like the NBA. Like, hey, I understand 3-pointers are cool; they're worth more. I understand math. I get how that works. But sometimes it's not fun just watching people drive and kick out to open threes the entire day. Like, there's a part of me that likes watching Anthony Edwards especially just attack the mid-range and then attack the rim and make these tough shots. It's not all just, like, kick out for open threes. I feel the same way about baseball. I understand home runs are worth more. I don't like watching guys swing for the fences and strike out 17 times and maybe you run into 2 home runs and, hey, there's a difference in the game. I like small ball. I like hit and runs. I like stolen bases. So it's been nice for this Tennessee team to kind of embrace that. They can hit the long ball, but they also can, in that inning, the 6th inning against Florida, they blew it open. It was like 5 straight hits.
Yeah.
Singles, doubles. There was no home run until the end of it, really.
Curley's been great at that.
Yeah.
At the start of the year, like he was obviously, he slips into the lineup and starts hitting home runs and everyone starts talking about him. But like ever since then, he just seems like such a solid bat, a guy that, like you're talking about, Johnny, just gets those singles and doubles.
I mean, same for Blake Burke, too, man. Like, I feel like Blake Burke has started hitting a lot of singles and doubles. Mm-hmm. Like, in years past, I don't feel like he really hit doubles. I feel like it was either home run, maybe he'll ground a ball through the gap for a single or so, but, like, that was kind of it with him. I feel like now he's more controlled and just actually, an all-around hitter. Curley, though, like you said, like, it feels like Dean Curley's been stuck at 9 home runs for, like, the last month and a half.
But his average keeps going up.
Right. Like, yeah, yeah. Like it's not something that, like, you're necessarily mad about. Right. Like, yeah, would you want the power to be there and hit some home runs? Sure. But, like, it's not like, hey, the home runs quit coming and he became a bad player. It's not the way it's been at all. Like, he's been really good. And that's a guy, of course, as a freshman that you anticipate if he hangs around will be a really good Vol and, like, one of the more beloved guys here.
One more name. He just got called up last week. We've talked about him. Jordan Beck. Colorado, he has 3 hits, batting .143. The common denominator with all these guys is they're playing on bad teams. But that means they're going to get a lot of run. And it's rare that you see any of these players. There's not many players that make the adjustment like you flip a switch and they just start hitting like crazy. It's very rare. So,
yeah, it's not good that he only has 3 hits because he had 2 in his first game.
He did.
He's kind of slumping.
A lot of whiffs too. So, again, hopefully they're going to have some patience with him because they're not playing for much at this point.
Hour 2 in the books, hour 3 coming at you. It's the morning show here on Fan Run Radio.
Who's ready to watch your Southern League champs take the field for a fantastic 2024 season? All season long, your favorite nights are back, like Star Wars, Margaritaville, 4th of July, UT Night, and so much more. And don't forget, awesome daily promotions too, like